Welcome everybody, thanks for tuning in. My name is Mickey McDonald. I'm an indie game developer and an extreme video game geek. I'm going to take some time today and chat with you about how to create a Windows 8 game using the HTML5 platformer game kit. So a little bit about the goal of this video. The goal of this video is to show you how you can leverage the HTML5 platformer game kit to create your own Windows Store game. By the end of this video, I want you to be able to take away a few key points. First off, I want you to be able to replace existing content with your own content. Next, I want you to be able to modify gameplay and logic to match your game's design. I want you to be able to use a simple and flexible map editor to create the level layouts. And lastly, we're going to step through the template and I'll highlight some of the key points. So let's talk about this template. This template was created by MC Funky Pants. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to load up one of the two games that comes with the kit. I'm going to walk you through it and kind of highlight some of the gameplay mechanics and some of the things to expect when using this kit. Okay, so this is one of the games that comes with the kit. This is Gwendolyn the Lionhearted. Now the reason I've chosen to demo this one for you is this is the actual game that I built mine off of. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to click play, and I'm going to run you through some of the highlights of the game and the template in general. So the first thing is the input. Now we have our keyboard input, we have the ability to move left and right, we have the ability to jump and attack. But you also notice that on screen, there's some icons. Over here in the left hand corner, we have some icons for moving left and moving right. And then over in the other right-hand corner, we have the icon for attack and the icon for jump. And of course, right in the middle, we have an icon that allows us to pause the game. So this is great. All that input and icons are set up and ready to go for you right out of the box. Another good thing about the template and this game in general is the fact that the HUD's already set up and working for you. So if you notice up here, at the top we have a timer. We also have a loot counter that can be, you know, considered your score. And then over here, we have a counter that lets us know how many pieces of loot are remaining. One other thing I want to highlight for you is the fact that this already has snap enabled. So if I go ahead and I snap it here, you'll notice that the game pauses. And if I bring it out of snap, it stays paused until I either click a movement button or I click pause. So there you go. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to kind of play through it just a little bit so you kind of get a feel of what the platformer is all about. So you can see, kind of running through, picking up loot. I can attack the enemies. Basically, I just got to make it from platform to platform. Collecting the loot, getting past the enemies, and ultimately reaching the end. So there you go. That's one of the games that comes with the kit. And is a great example for you to get started with. Awesome. So that was the Gwendolyn the Lionhearted. So as you can see, it's your basic platformer, very Mario-esque. Now I'm going to show you what I created with this platformer kit. The game I created has got lots of zombies in it. Now you might be asking yourself, why did you do zombies? Well, because I'm like a lot of people, I love zombies. So let's go ahead and take a look at what I created with the kit. The game I created is called Running with Zombies. Now, Running with Zombies is a runner game. If you're not sure what a runner game is, it's a slight tweak on the platformer genre. Instead of being able to move the player left and right, up and down, we limit the controls to only being able to jump and attack, and we constantly move the player's character to the right. So this changes the gameplay from jumping from platformer to platform to something more of akin to avoiding obstacles and making it past the enemies. So I'm going to fire up Running with Zombies and I'll highlight some of the differences. So this is the game that I created using the template. This is Running with Zombies. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to click play. I'm going to highlight some of the key differences and show you some of the similarities between this game and the original template. And the first thing you're going to notice when it comes to input is my character is constantly moving to the right. The only input that I have now is the ability to jump and the ability to attack. So this changes the mechanic right off the bat from the platformer into the runner that we wanted. So now you're going to notice the similarities too. Up at the top, we still have the timer. It's counting up. Just has a little different of a look. And instead of loot, we have score. The principle is the same. It's just keeping track of points. Some of the other similarities is it still has the ability to snap. So if I snap it, it pauses. If I pull it back out, it stays paused until I either click a button or click the pause button at the bottom. Of course, I changed up the on-screen input a little bit as well. I made it so that the jump is on the left-hand side and the attack is on the right-hand side. But overall, you can definitely see the similarities, and you can also see the differences. So there you go. That's the game I created using the awesome template from MC Funky Pants. Okay, let's take a look at some of the highlights of this kit. First off, it's well documented and well commented. If you fire up the source code and start reading through it, you're going to learn a lot right off the bat. MC Funky Pants has done a great job nearly commenting every line of code. Another great thing is the sprite sheet animation system. This makes it really easy for you to get your new content in and looking good with little effort. It also has the game logic and states already set up. So you got some things like a menu system, a title screen, you've got the win and loss conditions already set up for you. If you've ever built a game before, you know this is the most time-consuming part of creating a game. Next, we have the touch and keyboard input system. This is great because both of them are already set for you right out of the box. You can target the mobile stuff, like Surface and any touch-enabled device, and you also have the keyboard input to fall back on. Another thing that's great about this kit is it's easy to create and load the levels. We're going to use the tiled map editor to actually create our levels, and then I'll show you how to load them in. It actually parses them using a JSON format. We'll get into that a little bit later on, though. Now, this kit is great for beginners or advanced coders. It's great for beginners because, like I said, it's really well commented and easy to follow. And it's also good for the advanced coders because there's some really good techniques that you can take away from this. Alright, now let's talk about the agenda for this video. Our agenda today. First off, we've got setup. So I'm going to show you what tools you need, and I'm also going to show you how to set up your source code. After that, we've got asset collection. I'm going to highlight some of the great places on the web that you can get some really good free art. After that, we've got swap the assets. So I'm going to show you how to take those newly acquired assets and put them into the game. After that, we're going to take a look at modifying the input and game logic. So this is where I'm going to actually show you how to change the input from the platformer to the runner style, and I'm going to show you a couple of little game tweaks to make things happen. Finally, I'm going to show you how to make the levels. So we're going to, again, use the tiled map editor. I'm going to show you how to create the levels and then get them into our game. Alright. So let's swing right into it and start off with our setup. Alright, the first thing we're going to do when we get set up is get our tools. So let's take a look at the tools we're going to need. You're going to need Windows 8. If you're running this or viewing this on Windows 7 or XP, it's time to upgrade. Next, you're going to want a Windows Store Developer account. This account is what you're going to use to upload your masterpiece to the store. So if you haven't done so already, swing on over to the Windows Developer Hub and create yourself a store account. Next, we're going to need Visual Studio 2012. Now when you get to the site, you're going to notice there's a lot of different versions of Visual Studio. I suggest you go for the Ultimate. This is the one that has the most bells and whistles. It's a good way to understand what Visual Studio has to offer. If later on down the road you find this just is a little bit more than I need, you can roll back then. Next, we have the tiled map editor. This is what we're going to use to actually lay out our level design. I'll go into detail a little bit more about this later on in the video, but this is a very simple, flexible, and free map editor. Okay, great. Now that you have your tools all set up and installed, our next step is to set up our source code. So I've gone ahead and I've extracted the template source code, and I've created a new folder on my computer. This new folder is going to be my working directory. So now I want to get some source code into my working directory. So the first step I'm going to do is I'm going to go inside of the template into the example games folder, and I'm going to right click on the Gwendolyn file folder. I'm going to copy this. I'm going to paste this into my working directory. Now you may remember that I said I was going to be building my game off of the Gwendolyn game that he built with the template. So that's the reason I've decided to copy this file folder. Now that we have the source code for the Gwendolyn game inside of our working directory, we're going to want to rebrand it so that we can tell it apart from the template source code. So the first step to this is to rename the file folder. So right click on it, scroll down to rename, and let's name it after our game. In my case, it was Running with Zombies. Great. Now that we have that taken care of, we're going to want to launch our solution in Visual Studio and start rebranding it inside of there. So let's go into our file folder and scroll down until we find the Visual Studio solution file. When we double click this, it's going to launch our solution inside of Visual Studio. Now you'll notice a security warning pop up. This is just to remind you not to open files that you don't trust. But because we know this is a trustworthy source, let's go ahead and click OK. After a few moments, our solution will be ready to go. So the first step to rebranding our solution inside of Visual Studio is to open up our Solution Explorer view. Now we're going to go to the top where it says our solution name. We're going to right click on this, and we're going to scroll down to rename. And we're going to name this after our game. So in my case again, it's Running with Zombies. Great. Now we're going to change the project folder. That's the one with the little JS beside it. Go ahead and right click on this and scroll down to rename. We're going to name this after our game again. Great. Now we have our solution rebranded. If you look up here in the top left, you'll notice that it has our game name. And if we minimize this and look back at our folder, you'll notice that all the solution files are rebranded with our game's name. You'll still notice that we have a Gwendolyn temporary key. Don't worry about that. That's going to get changed later. So that takes care of setting up our source code. Now let's move on to the next step in creating our video game. Next on our agenda is asset collection. Honestly, it's all about the content. You might have a really fun to play game, but if it's not very nice to look at, you're not going to get the market share you deserve. So I want to take a few minutes here and highlight some of the resources that you can use to get some royalty-free artwork. On the website Woot Studio, where you downloaded the template, you'll notice that there's some free game art. There's four packs here. There's an Outer Space pack, there's a Steampunk pack, a zombie pack, and a Day of the Dead pack. These packs are great because they include things like characters, weapons, accessories, and some environmental assets. I actually used the zombie pack to create my game. Next up, we have OpenGameArt.org. OpenGameArt.org is a great place for people to share their assets. There's a lot of content on this site, including 3D and 2D. So if you're looking to get started and you don't really have that artistic flair, this is a great starting point. Now, the last resource that I want to point out is a resource from Jesse Freeman. Jesse Freeman is a Microsoft technical evangelist who's been kind enough to share some of his artwork. I suggest checking out his blog, even to get a little bit behind the scenes and what it takes to create some of these games. Now, there's one thing that I want to highlight about all of these assets. You're going to have to modify them a little bit. They're not all going to be the right shape or right size. Their placements might be a little bit off. But honestly, that's a little out of the scope of this video. But I'm sure if you fire up Internet Explorer and do a quick Bing search, you'll find exactly what you're looking for. Awesome. So that's our asset collection. Next up, we've got swap the assets. So now that you've got your content all collected and modified, it's time to get it into the game. Now there's a couple of ways we can do this. So the first method is probably the easiest. This is just copying over the existing files with the new files that we have. So if you take a look here in my assets folder, I have three files. I have my enemy sprite sheet, I have my parallax, and I have my player sprite sheet. So let's go ahead and try and copy the parallax background into the game media folder and overwrite the already existing file. I'm going to right-click the parallax background, scroll down to copy. I'm then going to go into my game folder, click on my game media folder, and I'm going to click paste. A message is going to pop up and it's going to say the destination already has a file named parallax. I'm going to click replace the file in the destination to override the already existing file. This is the easiest way to replace the content and requires me to change no code. As you can see, changing the background this way was very easy. So let's go ahead and use the same method to change out the player. So back here in the assets folder where I've stored all my new assets, I have my player sprite sheet. I'm going to copy this, I'm going to paste it inside of my game media folder. Again, it's going to pop up asking me if I want to replace it. Now that I've replaced the sprite sheet, in order to get it working properly, I'm going to have to make some slight code adjustments. So let's go ahead, fire up Visual Studio, and take a look at those changes right now. Inside Visual Studio, we're going to select our JS folder, click the dropdown, and pick our ludus.js file. Now, if you scroll down a little bit into this file, you'll see some variable declarations for our sprites. This should be underneath the comment sprites aplenty. You'll see here in the second variable declaration, we actually set the pixel dimensions of the player sprite. Now, the easiest way for us to get this information from our tile sheet is to actually open it up in a program like Paint. And if we take a look down here at the bottom, it tells us the dimensions of the picture. And in my case, it's 128 by 810. Now, in order for me to get the exact size of only the player as one sprite, I'm going to take the 810 and I'm going to divide it by the amount of frames in the sheet. So in my case, I have 6 frames in total. If I divide 810 by 6, I'll get 135. So 135 is the height of my player. So I'm going to go back into Visual Studio and I'm going to take a look at my frame size. Now, my first frame size is 128, And it just so happens that's the same size as my sprite sheet. Now the second number is 96, and that's a little smaller than mine. So I'm going to go ahead and change this to 135. Great. So that takes care of our pixel dimension for the player sprite. Next, we're going to change the animation to match up with our sprite sheet. So because this file is really long, we're going to use a little cheat to find out where we have to change it. So I'm going to go ahead and use the tool, the Find Next. So I hit Control F, and that'll bring up the tool. I'm going to start typing in player.animation. And before I can even get the N in, you can see it's already found what we're looking for. So you'll see here, we have the idle animation, the move animation, the jump animation, the fall animation, and the attack animation. And each one of these are selecting slices out of their sprite sheet. So now we want to make it match our sprite sheet. So let's go ahead and do the idle animation. We're going to open up our sprite sheet in Paint again and take a look at the frames that we have. Now we start counting at zero because that's how computers count in arrays. So it's actually going to be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So for our idle animation, it's looking like 3 and 4 would be our best choice. So let's go back into our code and change the slices from 3 till 4. Now if you had more in between, say it was 3 to 6, you would actually put 3 and then 6, and it would play every frame in between the two of them. Next up, we're going to do our move animation. So let's go back and take a look at what would be best for our move. It's looking like 2 to 4 is going to be the best for us. So let's go back and set our move animation to 2 till 4. Perfect. Next up is jump. So if you look here, we really only have one with him in the air, and that's 1. But we're going to need one with him on the ground too to make it look a little more fluid. So let's go ahead and pick 1 and 2. Now because we don't have that many animations, we can make the jump animation and the fall animation pretty much the same. So let's go ahead and just make it 1 and 2. That'll make them look the same going up and coming down. It's not a big deal for the way our game looks. Finally, we have the attack animation. For us, we only have the one frame for attack. And that's our last frame, number 5. So we can set our attack animation to frame 5. And that way it'll only play frame 5 on the attack. Now before we finish up the animation, we have a couple more things we have to do. First, we need to change the amount of frames that it says it has available. Right now it's set to 9, so let's go ahead and change that to our 6 frames. But again, because it counts from 0, we're only going to set this to 5. Finally, we want to change the duration in between the frames. Right now, if you look up here, it's set to 75. That's a little quick considering we don't have that many frames. So let's set that to something more like 150. That should give it a little bit more of a fluid look. Perfect. So that's it for animation. Now we have one more thing to do before our player asset will show up in the game properly. And that's to change the collision bounding box size. So if you look down here, where it says player.collisionRec, we actually set the size of the rectangle here. Right now it's set to 32 width and 64 height. We're going to change the height to 96. And the reason for this is our sprite is a little bit bigger than the original sprite. So we're going to make the size of this rectangle just a little bit bigger. Play around with this until you find the right height for your sprite. Okay, now I'm going to show you another method to get some content into our game. this method, we're going to take some completely new content and put it inside of our game. So if you take a look at my assets folder here, I have three new files. I've got the enemy's man, enemy boy, and enemy woman sprite sheets. I'm going to go ahead and select the three of these. I'm going to copy them and paste them inside of my game media folder. Now I'm going to go ahead and launch Visual Studio again and make some changes inside of there so that we can have these show up inside of our game. The first thing we need to do inside of our Visual Studio is to actually import the new content into our game project. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to click the Game Media dropdown. And you'll notice that it already lists the existing content. So let's go ahead and right-click on the Game Media folder. We're going to go to Add, and we're going to select the Existing Item option. Now inside of our Game Media folder, we're going to scroll down until we find the Enemy's Man, Enemy Boy, and Enemy Woman files. I can select all three, and then if I click Add, it's now imported them into our folder. So the next step is to actually change the code to point to these newly imported files. Let's go ahead and close up the Game Media folder, and we're going to open up the JS folder and select our Ludus JS file again. Now if we scroll down to the bottom, very close to the bottom, you'll come to the function Ludus init. All the way down here. There we go. Now the line that you're looking for inside of the Ludus init function is the line jaws.assets.add. This is where we tell it to load all of the assets for our game. So at the very end, you'll notice that it has enemies.png. So let's go ahead and change that to enemiesman.png. After it, we'll put a comma, and we'll start loading the other one. So, enemies boy. Now make sure that you put quotations around these because they are strings. So, enemy boy dot png, comma, and we'll do enemy woman. Ooh, a little spelling mistake there. Enemy woman. .png. Great. So that's the first step in getting our content into our code. Just like our player sprite, we're going to need to adjust the frame size for each of the sprites inside of our sprite sheet. So let's go ahead and scroll right back up to the top of our code. In the variable declaration section, you'll remember that under the sprites aplenty comment, that's where we had the player and we changed his frame size. So if we go back there, you'll notice that we have an enemy frame size. So let's go ahead and change that to match our new sprite sheets. So again, the easiest way to do this would be to open up the sprite sheet inside of like a program like Paint, and then figuring out the width and height of each one of those pixels, or each one of those sprites, inside of your sprite sheet. So in my case, the average worked out to 80 for the width and 135 for the height. So that's going to take care of setting our frame size for our enemy. Alright, let's take a look at one last thing before we finish up with our assets. What I'm going to show you now is a simple method of letting the computer randomly pick which one of the enemy sprite sheets to display for the enemies. So in order to do this, we're going to have to go to our spawn enemies function. I'm going to use my handy find tool again. So I hit Control F. I'm going to search for function spawn. Oh, there we go. I already found it. So now if you look inside of our spawn enemies function, you're going to notice some new code. I'll go ahead and I'll highlight the new code that I've written here. Alright. Now, it might look a little different, but I'm going to go ahead and step through it. Make a little more sense that way. So first off, we create a variable called RND, stands for random, and we're going to assign it a random number between 1 and 3. That's all that line of code there does. Then we have a switch case based on the random number. Now, if our random number is 1, we're going to go ahead and set the animation sprite sheet to be the enemy's man. Now, the code right here might look like a lot, but if you look down at the commented line, this is the original line of code that was here. It's the same thing. All I've done is replaced the file that it gets. So then what we do is for the random number, if it's 2, we just change that sprite sheet that it gets to the boy, and for 3, we set it to the woman. So that's it. That's as simplest as it can get to basically randomly pick which one of the sprite sheets is going to use for the enemy. Now, there's a couple other things that I changed here to make it work with my sprite sheets. The first thing that I changed was up here at the top, where it originally sets the enemy sprite, it has the value flipped true. Mine's actually set to false. Now, the reason mine's set to false is because my enemies in my sprite sheet originally start out facing the player, so I don't need to flip them to begin with. The second thing that I changed was the animation slices. So just like our player sprite sheet, we had a different amount of frames. So because my enemies only have around 4 frames, and one of them is a death animation, I'm going to go ahead and set my slices to 1 through 3. Again, remember we start counting from 0 here. So that's it. That takes care of switching our sprite sheets. Every time the computer spawns a new enemy, it's going to randomly pick which one of these sprite sheets to display for the enemy. Perfect. Now you're armed with the ability to change the assets. You've seen 2 different ways to do it, so go out there and experiment and find some awesome content for your game. Next up on the list, we have modify the input and game logic. Now I'm not going to go into detail every single step that I took to change the game over, but I'm going to highlight some of the key points now for you. So let's go ahead and fire up Visual Studio and get started. Okay, let's change up some input and some game mechanics to turn the platformer game into our runner game. So the first thing we'll take a look at is our input. Now, because the platformer allows the player to move right and left and jump up and down, and for our runner game, we don't want the player to do that input, the first thing we're going to do is change the player's controls. So go ahead and fire up the ludus.js file. Now we want to find where the player's velocity on the X plane is updated. So basically, we're going to search through our updates. But to make this a little easier, I'm going to use my find tool again. And I'm going to do a search for player.vx, which stands for velocity on the X plane, is assigned the value of plus movement speed, underscore speed. Perfect. So there you go, it found it for us. And if you look here, the first line says if you've touched left, or pressed A, we're going to move the player to the left. If you've touched right, or pressed D, we'll move the player to the right. So we want to limit these two abilities. So let's go ahead and comment out these lines of code. And then we're going to copy the little bit of code here that actually moves the player to the right. Alright, now we're going to paste that under the commented code, or commented out code rather. Perfect. And that takes care of our player movement. So if you go ahead and run the game, you'll notice that the character can only move to the right. If you press left, it won't do anything. If you press right, it won't do anything. But you can still jump and you can still attack. So we just, with one line of code, changed the platformer game into our runner game. Okay, so now that we've got our input in place, We're going to change a little bit of the game mechanics. Now, you may have noticed if you ran the game already that the enemies can just walk into thin air. They'll just walk off the edge of a platform and they'll just keep floating through the air until they hit the end of the board. And that doesn't work very well. So the reason that they're doing this is because they don't have any physics on them. And because we don't really want to write a bunch of physics code to make them fall, you know, when they reach the edge of a platform, I'm going to show you a neat little set of code that's basically going to make them pace back and forth. So they'll head a certain amount of pixels in one direction, and then they'll turn around and they'll head back the same amount of pixels. They'll continuously do this, so it'll give them the appearance that they're just pacing back and forth. So let's go ahead and look at the code that we need to put in to make that happen. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to use our find tool, and we're going to find our function spawn enemies. Alright, great. Now that I found that, we're going to scroll down and we're going to look at the area where we actually push our enemy into the array. So that's the last line here in this function. So right above that, we're going to add a couple of properties to the enemy class. So the first property that we're going to add is going to be our starting x. We're going to set our starting x to the actual x, the location where the enemy is first spawned. Now the reason we need this is so that we know how far the enemy has traveled and when we should turn them around. Now we're going to add one more property to the class. And the property we're going to add is moving right. This is going to be a Boolean value that's going to let us know if the enemy is moving to the right or moving to the left. We're going to assign this the value of true right off the hop. Okay, great. So now we have two other properties added to our enemy. So now we're going to use these properties to actually put in the code that'll make them pace back and forth. So let's go back to our find tool, and we're going to look up our function enemy AI. Now you'll notice in here there's some extra code. I'll highlight the code that I've wrote to make him move back and forth, and then we'll step through it so you get a better understanding of what this code's doing. Okay, so first off, we check to see if the enemy is moving right. If he's moving right, we continue moving him to the right. And we make sure that the sprite is set to not be flipped, so that it's facing in the direction that it's moving. If it's not moving right, we're going to move it to the left, and we're going to flip the sprite so that, again, it's moving in the right direction. Finally, we have a check down here that checks to see if the character has moved a certain amount of pixels. In this case, I've set it to 256. Okay, now there's two lines of code that I've commented out here. The first one being the original movement code for the enemy, and the second one being movement on the y-axis. So that's the axis that goes up and down. We don't need that because our enemy only moves right to left. Okay, so that pretty much takes care of our enemy and our input. So let's go ahead and move on to the next step in creating this awesome game. Great, that was modifying the input and game logic. As you can see, a couple of slight changes, we have a completely different game. Now it's time to create our level layouts. So let's take a look at creating our level layouts. We're going to go ahead and we're going to use our map editor now. So let's fire up Tiled Map Editor and take a look at what it takes to create a new level. Okay. Here we are inside of Tiled Map Editor. Now this is a really simple map editor, but it's also very powerful. So I'm going to show you a couple of the highlights, and I'll point out a couple of the ways that he set up the levels that you can kind of follow that as your template when you create your new levels. So let's point out a couple of the tools that you're going to need. First up here on the bar, you're going to see we have a few of these tools. The one that you're going to find handy right off the bat is the erase tool. Now, if I go ahead and click the erase tool, I can erase things on the layer. So now let's take a look at what layers we have available. We have warp, we have enemies, we have danger, we have bouncy, no collide, pickups, and finally walls. Okay, so I'm going to start by erasing some of the walls. So if I click the walls layer, you'll see that it's highlighted, and I have my eraser, I can go ahead and start removing walls. Great. So now I want to get rid of these pipes right here, but as you can see, I can't erase them because they're not part of the wall layer. So in order to move those, I'm going to have to go to the no collide layer. Select my no collide layer, and I can remove that. Okay, perfect. Now if you want to add something, you got to make sure that you're on the right layer. So say I wanted to add a pickup right here beside this light. I'm going to select my pickup layer. Then I'm going to scroll over in my tile sheet. I'm going to look for a pickup logo. Oh, there we go. There's a bunch. So let's go ahead and select the ring one. Now I can place this inside the level. It's that easy. So as you can see, although it's very simple, it's very powerful, and in a short period of time you can create some really good layouts. So now through the magic of the internet, I'm going to show you a created level. So ta-da. This is the level that we created for running, well, the first level anyway, for the Running with Zombies game. So as you can see, I've got a completely different look. Some trees in there, a few tombstones, I've got my placeholder for my enemies. Now the difference here is, I've actually added to the original tile set. So if I scroll over here, you can see that there's the original tiles are still there, but I've edited it so that I had new tiles that I could lay down. Now again, I'm not going to go into exactly how you can create these new tiles or how you can modify the tile sheet. If you do a quick Bing search, I'm sure you'll find all the information you need on that. But there you go. So that's basically how easy it is to create some levels. But now that I have my level, I'm going to show you how we actually export it and get it inside the game. So we're going to go up to File, and we're going to go to Export As. Now we want to make sure that we export this as a JSON file. So if it's not selected, click the drop down and go down to the JSON file. Now we're going to rename it. In my case, this is level 1, so I'm going to name it over top of the already existing level. In this case, it's the JSON level. I click save, or level 1, sorry, .json. I'm going to click save. It's going to ask you if you want to replace it. I'm going to say yes. And that's it. So that's exported. Now there's one more step that we need to take before it'll actually work inside of our game. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to show you that now. Okay, so our final step to get the level into our game is to actually go into our game media folder. And here at the very top of the folder, you're going to see a file called underscore build levels. You're going to have to run this batch file every time you make a change to your level. It's going to set it up in a JSON format and do all the extra work, so that way our game can actually parse the created level and let you play it. So double click that, it only takes a quick second, and you're done. Alright, so that pretty much wraps up everything that I wanted to show you and highlight the most important changes, but I haven't shown you exactly everything. There's a few things that you can change and experiment with on your own. Some of the things that you're going to want to take a look at are actually changing the logos. You're going to want to change the splash screen. You're going to probably want to change the background of the menus, and maybe even some sound. But I think you're armed with all the tools that you need to do that, so I'm going to leave it up to you to experiment with, and it'll give you a better chance to learn a little bit more about the template. Well, that brings us to the end of our agenda. And the end of our video. I really hope you've learned a lot today,
and this helps inspire you in creating your next masterpiece. Thanks again for watching, and happy coding.